morning.
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 Always a wonderful treat to be able to learn together. I want to thank the OU for inviting me to speak on a topic that I think is not always the most pleasant of topics, but an extremely important topic. And I thank them for bringing awareness to this issue. We know our sages teach us, "Havizahir b'mitzvakala kibichamura, she'en atayadeya matan scharan shal mitzvos." One should be as careful with a minor commandment as with a great commandment, as no one knows the relative value, the relative reward of mitzvahs. That being said, we do find that certain mitzvahs do seem to get a little bit more of an emphasis from the Torah, from our sages, and it's important to pay particular attention when those come along. And I think Kibbud Avaim is a good example of a mitzvah which is highlighted a little bit beyond your typical mitzvah. The Yerushalmi in Maseches Peah in the very beginning calls it the mitzvah which is chamura min hachamuros, the severest of mitzvahs. The Gemara Maseches Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Amud Beis tells us that Hishbe Hakasu Kibbud Avaim lichvod hamakom, honoring one's parents is considered tantamount to honoring the Ribono Shel Olam. And the Gemara says v'chein bedin, makes sense that this should be the case. Sheshloshtan shutfin bo, these are three partners in the creation of a person, the two parents and the Ribono Shel Olam himself. The Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Kibbud Avaim, Hilchos Mamrim, Perek Vav, Halacha Aleph, calls Kibbud Avaim a mitzvah saseh gedola, a great mitzvah saseh, a very important one that we should be paying attention to. And the Shulchan Aruch, as he is not necessarily used to always doing in the beginning of Hilchos Kibbud Avaim in Simen Reish Mem of Yoredeya, says that a person is tzarich lizahir ma'od b'chvod aviv v'imo uvimora'am. A person has to be exceedingly careful with both the honor and the reverence. We know there's a mitzvah of kibud avaim, honoring one's parents, as well as mora, of revering, showing proper reverence and deference to one's parents. As much as we're told that this is an important mitzvah, we also get the sense from our sages that this is not an easy mitzvah to fulfill, not always an easy mitzvah to fulfill. The Gemara tells us in Kiddushin and Aflamet Aleph, well-known story of the saint Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon, the Gemara describes, would get down on all four, his arms and his legs, so his mother could climb on his back to get into and out of bed. And despite these efforts, when he would tell it to his colleagues, they would say, "Adayin lo higata lechatzi kibud," you haven't even gotten to half of what is expected for you from your parents. The Gemara tells us of a righteous Gentile, Dama ben Nisina, in that same daf in Maseches Kiddushin, who his mother, at an old age, she was a yarkelo b'fanav, tafchelo arosha, she hit him, she spat in his face, v'lo hichlima. He didn't embarrass her, he held his tongue, again showing the tremendous lengths that individuals would go to for kibud avaim. Whether these are actually prescriptive halacha, whether these are realistic for most people, or whether these are examples that are given to show us just how important the mitzvah is discussed. But there's no question that Chazal are teaching us how important this mitzvah is, even when it's not easy to do. And this is where Rabbeinu Bachya famously quotes from Reb Sadia Gaon. Reb Sadia Gaon is a little bit cryptic, but the way Rabbeinu Bachya interprets him on the Aseres Hadibros in Shmos Perichav is this is one of the mitzvahs where the Torah even itself insinuates how hard it is by giving us the reward. L'man yarichun yamecha, the Torah promises in the Ten Commandments, that one who honors one's parents will be blessed with a long life. And the Rabbeinu Bachya says, based on the Rasag, that, again, this is not always a mitzvah that is easy to fulfill, and therefore, especially as parents get older, it can be complicated, as we'll discuss, and therefore the Torah went out of its way to guarantee a special reward for this mitzvah. And to be honest, although for many people they are blessed that Kibbud Avaim comes very naturally and that they love their parents, they have tremendous gratitude for their parents, tremendous loyalty, the reality of the world, of human nature, is such that relationships are complex and it is not always an easy mitzvah for people to fulfill. Even with having been given tremendous good from their parents, having been brought into this world, it is not always an easy mitzvah. I would argue that it's not getting any easier as a mitzvah either, in terms of many of the cultural phenomena, the values which our modern culture espouses of youth over age, pleasure over loyalty. These are things that I see on a daily basis complicate the ability to maintain a loyal relationship, a loving relationship, even when it's not easy. And yet the Torah tells us unequivocally that regardless of the situation, there is a mitzvah to honor one's parents. One of the saddest situations that I see are parents whose children will not talk to them. oftentimes a single parent, oftentimes the child is being advised by a therapist to totally cut off contact from one's parent. I'm not getting into the issue of abuse, that's a whole other discussion, but these are people who I know who are not abusive. They may be what you would call annoying, they may be what you would call difficult, but not abusive in any sense, and yet many, many people have a very hard time continuing to fulfill this mitzvah. And that's why the Chazal and the Torah go out of its way to say the Jew does not believe in that. The Jew does not believe that this is just a matter of choice or a matter of convenience that one chooses to honor or respect one's parents. This is a bona fide obligation. Filial piety is at the heart of everything that we do. I think perhaps the most extreme example, or one of the most extreme examples of how difficult kibud av va'em can be, is when it comes to the issue of dementia. Dementia, when a person, God forbid, begins to lose his or her cognitive faculties. Dementia, as we know, has been increasing in modern society due to the bracha of longevity. Right? As people are living longer, we're seeing more and more instances where the cognitive faculties begin to go. But it's important to remember, dementia is not a normal part of aging. Right? People think of dementia as, I lose my memory, I'm asking a couple for help with a few names. That's not what we're talking about. Losing a little bit of memory as one ages, that may be normal, that may be appropriate. Dementia is a different level. It's hard to imagine anyone in this room or anyone in this world who has not had personal contact with what it means to care for someone who is struggling with this devastating illness. They're not only cognitive issues in terms of memory loss or confusion, there are many behavioral issues that can come up as well. Biting, yelling, aggression, wandering, psychosis, hallucinations, hearing things, seeing things, these are all part and parcel of what real dementia looks like. We're not going to get into the different types of dementia, but important to know there are different forms of it. But a lot of people forget, because it's become so prevalent, that this is not something that is a normal part of aging. Mortality, that's something that is built into the Bria. We don't believe people dying from old age, that's not something that we can combat. The notion of dementia being curable or being preventable is still something that we're working on. There's actually a lot of very exciting research coming out of Israel on vaccinations against Alzheimer's disease, different forms of prevention, different forms of treatment. And so again, this is an area that, although very depressing, very morbid, also has rays of hope. And then we have to keep looking, following the news for the possibility of improvement. But I can tell you just how often I see in the look of children's eyes just that burned out, right? Depressed, the bags under their eyes, caring for their parents, trying to do whatever they can, and seeing their parent in a situation where he or she is no longer the same person on the outside, at least, as they used to be. And so the question of how to make decisions in this context, what is considered too much, what is considered betrayal, that is a very, very difficult question for people to answer. And it is wrought with feelings of guilt, children feeling, I'm not doing enough, I need to be doing more, or feelings of apathy, of children who couldn't care less, who won't even show up, and will leave their parents to the system, so to speak, to take care of. And for this reason, it's so important to have some sense of what the halacha has to tell us about managing these issues. We know that no matter how dark a situation is, a Jew always has the halacha to follow. Right? Has given us a direction, and it is always so important to be able to follow and to know where to go. So when it comes to this issue of a parent who is no longer able to care for oneself, who has been progressively worsening in his or her mental state, the major question that comes up, again, I see this all the time, is the question of placement, right? At what point is a child obligated to house his or her parents at the home? Is there anything wrong with placing them in a facility which can perhaps tend to their needs better? What exactly does the Torah talk about? What does the Torah have to guide us on this issue? And the truth is, although this issue wasn't nearly as prevalent likely back in the old times, we do have ancient sources that already talk a little bit about this, that may be a precedent, a kernel that we can draw from in extrapolating the halacha to modern society. There's a well-known story, the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin and Daf Lamed Aleph, of Rav Asi. Rav Asi, one of the sages of the Talmud, lived in Babylon. We're told that he had an elderly mother. And although the Gemara is not entirely clear on the situation, and there's different takes in the Rishonim, many of the Rishonim, the Tosfos Rihazakin, the Rambam, and others, seem to interpret that this was a woman who had lost her mind, Nitrifa Daita. She was undergoing dementia. She was suffering that. And the Gemara relates that she asked him, first of all, get me jewelry. But she was making all sorts of demands on him. So he went and he got her jewelry. Then she said, get me a husband. She said, I'll try to get you a husband. She said, no, I want a husband as beautiful or as good as you are. And at that point, he began to realize that this was just a no-win situation, that she was past the point where he could accede to her demands, to her requests. She was past the point of rationality. And the Gemara relates that Shavka ve'azal la'arad Yisrael. Rav Asi apparently jumped ship. He ran away. He left Babylon and he moved to Israel and he left his mother behind. And the Gemara goes on to describe what happened, not as relevant for us. He wanted to know, should he heard that she was following him to Israel, should he leave Israel to go meet her? And the Gemara says that she ultimately passed away not long after. And so a very interesting Gemara. Not clear exactly what went on, and that leaves the Rishonim, the medieval commentators, to try to explain exactly what the situation was. And so the Rambam, Maimonides, one of the major, major sources for halacha that we follow nowadays, rules in his Mishneh Torah in Perek Vav of Hilchos Mamrim Halacha Yud, that seemingly based on this Gemara, he doesn't quote the name of Rav Asi, but he's seemingly using this as a precedent, that in our situation, if a parent loses their cognitive abilities, and it is becoming increasingly difficult for the child to care for them, the lashon of the Rambam is yishtadel linhog imahem kifidaitam. The first step is one has to try one's best to take care of them, to deal with them as they're able to do. So the Rambam is very clear that the first step, the level one, is yishtadel. And that's a very interesting term that the Rambam uses. What does yishtadel mean? Right, to try. A person has to try his or her best to care directly for their parent. But the beauty of the term yishtadel is it is an elastic clause, right? It is a very subjective term that no one individual can define for any given situation. It's impossible for me to stand here, and I'm not even qualified to stand here necessarily as a matpaskin here for an just teaching, but to tell anyone what is considered yishtadel. As a doctor, perhaps, can provide guidance on what is appropriate and what is not. When are you going too far? But every individual has to look and assess for themselves in their bigger situation what is doable. Not everything in life is doable. And therefore, the Rambam says there's no shame, there's no blame. The halacha tells you that you try your best. And the Rambam continues, if you are not able to, then yitzave la'acherim. Then you command, you instruct others to go ahead and take care of the parent. It's interesting, the Gemara itself never tells us that Rav Asi instructed someone else. The Gemara just says Rav Asi ran away. It doesn't tell us that he did. But the Nosei Kelim, the commentaries on the Rambam, says it's inconceivable that he would have just left his mother and not done anything. Of course, it must be that he arranged for other people to take care of her. It's an interesting Rambam on a few levels. First of all, the Rambam is often thought of as being on some level having what they call elitist expectations for people, right? The Rambam oftentimes, where other Rishonim will say, maybe we're not really capable of certain things, the Rambam expects a lot of us. Right? The Mishnah says in the second parak of Brachos that a chasson is potter b'kriyashma, that a man is getting married that night, his mind is distracted, he doesn't have to read kriyashma, because he's not going to have the appropriate kavana. So Tosfos, others, and Brachos and Daf Yud Zayin writes that nowadays none of us have such good kavana anyways on a regular Tuesday night. Forget about if you're getting married or not. Yishma is never so great. So why would we say a chassan that he doesn't have to read Kriyat Shema? No, a chassan nowadays should read Kriyat Shema. The Rambam famously doesn't do that. He says, no, we expect you to have good kavana. You usually have good kavana. Tonight you'll get off the hook because you're a chassan. The Rambam often has very high expectations of people. And you see, even the Rambam, in this situation, yishtadel. He recognizes this is something that is a very, very difficult parsha. It's impossible to command people that no matter what, under every circumstance, you are required to house your parent, you're required to take care of them. Yishtadel, try to do it yourself, either if that means they can live independently in their home and you're coming to help them, or you're having them move into the home. But if that is not doable, as defined, lichara, the Rambam doesn't spell it out, but the poskim say, your situation, your shalom bayis, right, if it's compromising on your marriage or on your ability to raise your children, these are all relevant factors together with your rabbi, with your doctor to discuss as to what point it would be appropriate to delegate care to someone else. So we see from the Rambam clearly this notion of yishtadel. And again, it's not a very common phrase in the Rambam of try your best, see what you can do, but at the same time, because like I said, people live with such weight on their shoulders that if at some point they throw in the towel and say, I just can't do it anymore, I have to put the parent in the home. And they live with such guilt. It's important to know that Judaism says it's okay. You try your best, don't shirk your responsibilities, but if it means delegating to someone else, that is, in the right situation, not only allowable, but perhaps what one should be doing. Interestingly, the Ravid, who is Rav Avraham ben David, the sparring partner of the Rambam, who often disagrees with the Rambam, there again disagrees, and he says, what? You would let someone else take care of your parent? He doesn't think that that's correct. He says, a very interesting dispute, he says, Lemi yitzaveh l'shomra. If you can't do it, who's going to do it? He says, of course, you should be able to do it. So many have asked what exactly the Ravid means. Is the Ravid just talking about the mitzvahs, meaning the reality that in his time there weren't old age homes, there weren't professionals who could be hired, and therefore he felt that there's no way for the Rambam, his theoretical idea of hiring someone else, it just wouldn't work? Or is he saying something different? Others point out as well, the Ravid seems to be against the Gemara. The Ravid is the one who says that you are not allowed to abandon your parents. Didn't we say in the Gemara the story of Rav Asi, right, the rabbi in Babylon, who we said left to the land of Israel, he left his mother behind? Doesn't that show us as a precedent, if you will, in case law, that one is allowed to leave their parent, to delegate responsibility to someone else? What's the Ravid saying that under all circumstances, under all costs, you must remain with your parents? And many have explained that the Ravid maybe doesn't mean exactly as I'm saying it. The Ran writes in Maseches Kiddushin, he says he doesn't understand the Ravid, but he says maybe the Ravid understood this Gemara as an exceptional Gemara. Why? Because what was Rav Asi doing? Where was he going? Was he going to Puerto Rico? Mm-hmm. Was he going to retire in Hawaii? He was going to Eretz Yisrael, right? He was going to the land of Israel. He says maybe that's a unique exception. We can't draw a rule for Kol HaTorah Kula that you're always allowed to abandon your parent if it's too difficult. Maybe for that one mitzvah, right? The Medrash tells us in Parshas Ekev that Yishu Eretz Yisrael is Shkula Kenegar Kol HaMitzvot Shebetorah, that living in the land of Israel is equivalent to the 613 mitzvahs, right? Maybe that's such a special mitzvah. That's what the Gemara was teaching us, that for that mitzvah, you can leave your parent, but not a general principle like the Rambam says, that if it's too hard, you're allowed to give up. It's interesting that two deos in the Magen Avraham, in Siman Reish Mem Ches, is just going to Israel itself the mitzvah? Even if you just visit the land of Israel, that's considered a mitzvah? Or is it dafka making aliyah, living in Israel, planning to move there, but not if you're planning on coming back? The Magen Avraham quotes the Maamar Chazal that maybe there's a mitzvah in every four amos that you walk in the land of Israel. And therefore, even if you're just going there, he's talking about a different context. And maybe, again, that would be considered a mitzvah on some level. From the Gemara, it sounds like Rav Asi was actually going to live in the land of Israel. Be that as it may, what we've seen so far is that there is apparently a dispute amongst the Rishonim as to what to do when a person's parent is no longer able to be cared for easily or in a reasonable way by a child. The Rambam says in that case, yitzaveh la'acherim, you can delegate it to others, and the Ravid seems to disagree. The Shulchan Aruch brings the halacha, which is the bottom line code of law, and this is how most poskim assume. Again, you should talk to your own Rav for matters of practical halacha. But the Shulchan Aruch rules like the Rambam, that in a situation of nitra fadaito, where the parent is no longer able to care of oneself, the preference is to care on your own for them, bring them into your home, go to their home, do what you can on your own. If you cannot, then you can delegate it to others. However, even with this, we have to ask a conceptual question, which could be very relevant in understanding what exactly we're recommending. And that is the following. When we say that you can appoint someone else, you can hire help to take care of your parents rather than you doing it directly. Of course, you're going to keep visiting, you're going to do as much as you can to continue to help, but you can get help to do the majority of the work. You can move them, even perhaps against their will, into a facility if that is what's best for them. So one can understand that in two very different ways. Sometimes in halacha, we have a concept called shlichus, right, where I can appoint an agent to do a mitzvah for me, right? This is the second parak of Maseches Kiddushin, Ha'ish Mekadesh Bo Ubishlucho. There's a mitzvah according to the Rambam to get married. And yet the Mishnah tells us that although it's preferable for you to go ahead, and probably more romantic as well, to get married yourself, if you want, you can appoint an agent to do that mitzvah for you, to go be Mekadesh, a woman for you. He'll give the ring, and he'll say, you're married to that guy. But don't recommend it, but it is doable. The concept of a shliach applies. There is a mitzvah to eradicate chametz from your home, right? The night before Pesach, the first Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim, of bedikas chametz. And the poskim tell us in Siman Taf Lamed Beis that if I am unable to do it myself, I am allowed to appoint a shliach. I can appoint an agent to do it. The agent, it's not just like a cleaning crew. They're doing this holy mitzvah of bedikas chametz, and I'm getting credit for it. It's a mitzvah of a concept of shlichus. They would recite the bracha when they're cleaning out my house and going with a candle. Some mitzvahs I can appoint the shliach to do on my behalf. And other mitzvahs obviously are not subject to this dispensation of fulfilling them vicariously. Right? Can I say I'm going to sleep in today and I'm going to ask you to put on tefillin for me? You'll be my shliach to put on tefillin. Or you'll be my shliach to sit in a sukkah for me. The sukkahs, I'm going to stay in the house. Doesn't work. Right? Intuitively, we all, and if it did work, I think many people would have found out about that by now, taken advantage. But it doesn't. There are many mitzvahs that you are not able to do by shliach. What's the rule? So, what about kibud avayim? Is kibud avayim more like getting married, bedikas chametz, where I can appoint someone else to do it, and it kicks back to me vicariously? It's as if I'm doing it. They're like an extension of me, halachically. Or would we say kibud avayim is more in the realm of tefillin? It's more in the realm of sukkah, arba meaning. There is one day that's rejected, and maybe arba meaning you can appoint a shliach for. We don't assume that way. You have to shake the lulav yourself. Which one is kibud avayim more like? Is that subject to a shliach? In other words, everybody agrees, according to the Rambam, you are allowed to say, this is too much for me, I'm going to have the facility do it. But when you do that, what's going on? Is it that the facility is doing it and you're getting credit for it because you set it up, they're your shliach? Or are we saying, no, you missed the opportunity on this. The right course of action is to just not do the mitzvah anymore. You won't do kibud avayim. We're giving you a heter to not do kibud avayim, and let them take care and clothe and feed your parent, which are really sort of the core elements of kibud avayim, caring for, feeding, bathing, clothing, etc. So this is a big debate. This is discussed. The Yalkut Yosef, the Rav Yitzchak Yosef, brings a nice piece on this about whether or not there is an inyan of shlichus, whether you can appoint a shliach to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud avayim. He suggests maybe there are two aspects to kibud avayim. Maybe some of the concepts of kibud avayim you are able to appoint a shliach for, because after all, the point of those is that is the result. So for example, the Torah cares that your parents should not be abandoned. The Torah cares your parents should have clothes. The Torah cares your parents should eat. That aspect, which is the result, that they should be taken care of, that, it's okay. If I don't do it, I can appoint someone else to do it. That's subject to shlichus. But there may be other aspects of kibud avayim that are not transferable, that the Torah wants you, for example, to stand up when your parents enter, right? That's a halacha. Most parents are mochel on that. Most parents say, you don't need to stand up for me. But something like that, where you are personally toiling for your parent, maybe that aspect cannot be converted to a shliach. So again, you see that when it comes to appointing someone else, it's not fully clear in the halacha. Is it that they're doing it as your shliach, as your agent? Or is it, no, that I'm just not doing the mitzvah anymore, and that's okay. The Torah said, ad kan, now you stop doing kibud avayim and you have somebody else do it, that's what we're telling you to do. And it seems like there may be yes and no. It could be that some aspects of kibud avayim, the fact that you set it up, you're now fulfilling that through them because you put that into place. And other aspects perhaps require, you have to show up, and it requires direct personal involvement. I thought one could suggest that even if we say that what's going on here is shlichus, and that you're appointing an agent for kibud avayim, we don't mean a shliach in the classic sense of the word. A shliach, normally, if I want to appoint somebody to do bedikas chametz, for example, so there are rules about who can be a valid shliach in halacha. The Gemara tells us there in Maseches Kiddushin, Kein tarimu gam matem, matem b'nei bris, af shluchachem b'nei bris, that to appoint a shliach has to be Jewish, but you can't appoint a non-Jewish shliach to go ahead and marry someone on your behalf. They have to be included in the same parsha. Here, though, one could suggest, perhaps, that we don't mean that limited form of shlichus. For example, does that mean that you need to get a Jewish aide to care for your parents so that they are your halachic shliach, your halachic agent? Or would we say, no, we're not talking in such specific halachic terms of a classic shliach. Maybe we mean that as long as you got someone, even if they're not Jewish, right? In Israel, many of the elderly receive wonderful care from people from the Philippines, for example, from people from other cultures who take wonderful care of the elderly, that there, would we say that if you got a Jewish aide, then you're fulfilling the mitzvah because they're your agent, But if you got a non-Jewish aid, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah. Perhaps one could suggest that this is a different type of shlichus. This is really just a result-oriented idea that if you've got it taken care of through anyone, perhaps then you have fulfilled it. But as we mentioned, even if we assume that one is able to fulfill this mitzvah through a shliach, no question that to whatever extent a child can remain involved, visiting as often as possible, checking in, that is going to be extremely important. The idea that you are able to delegate to a shliach, we said, is really the second level. Ideally, you should take care, but a yishtadel, if you're not able to do it, no blame, no guilt, then you appoint someone else to do it for you. There are, however, a few areas where it may be preferable to bedafka appoint someone else to do it instead of you. These we won't have time to get into in detail, but just to list them, they're all probably fairly obvious and intuitive, but good to know that this is what the halacha says as well. When it comes to bathing, right? So bathing a parent, then being in an immodest, unclothed state, that is really something one should avoid. The Gemara in Pesachim and Daf Nun Aleph tells us there's an aveira to bathe together, unclothed with one's parent. And one has to be very careful about their modesty, right? We learned this already from Noach, right? Noach and his sons, and how careful they were for his dignity and his privacy. That's not the halachic source, but you see a precedent right there. So here again, it would be certainly better to delegate that to someone else rather than saying, I want the mitzvah, I'm going to assist them with going to the bathroom, with bathing, etc. Medical treatments as well are certainly an area where one has to be very careful. There's a prohibition, the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Pei Dalet, to draw blood right from a parent, to wound them. And so certainly when it comes to medical procedures, you would really want to be trying to get someone else to do that for you. Similarly, the Tzitz Eliezer has a tshuva in Chelek Yibayis, Simen Montes, where he talks about, God forbid, this again is something that happens not infrequently in severe dementia. What if a parent needs to be restrained? What if sometimes a parent has to be tied down for their own safety so they don't get hurt, so they don't hurt other people? That again, he says, absolutely, you should hire someone else to do that. That shouldn't be done by your own hands. If it's an emergency, okay, then you do it. But this is not the sort of thing that you should try to do yourself. And finally, an important point is what the Radbaz raises on that Rambam. The Radbaz, one of the commentators on the Rambam, David Ben Zimri, he says that if they're going to do a better job than you will do, that's also an important consideration. And this is very, very relevant. A lot of times when there is an emotional connection, children are just not able to have the same effect. They don't have the training, they don't have the objectivity to really care well for their parents as might happen in an appropriate facility. And again, that would be another instance where, if you will, the performing the mitzvah in a better fashion, having someone who can really do it without that connection, that would be preferable perhaps than to doing it yourself. When we say it's better for you to do it yourself, that's talking about if you can do just as good a job. But if there are going to be elements where you really can't do as good a job, you don't have the training, you don't have the distance from them, perhaps bedafka, it would be better to do something. Just wanted to talk briefly about, from a medical perspective. So what are some things we're talking about? A person gets into this position, Rahmana Litzlan, their parent is in a severe state of dementia. We said there absolutely is still an obligation for kibud avaim, though there may be a limit to it, in terms of at a certain point, you back off and you delegate it to others. What are some things that you can do to try to help in that situation? So a couple of just brief points to think about and that should be discussed with one's own personal doctor. First, of course, is advanced planning. Advanced planning is critical in this area, and it can relieve so much of the guilt that is often associated with making big decisions for one's parents against their will. If in advance, they can tell you what their will would be. If they can tell you when they're in a different state of mind, this is what I would like to have done. Not always doable, it's not a comfortable conversation to have, but that can sometimes solve a number of the issues and help emotionally in a significant way. Sometimes earlier placement also, when a person is still in a better state of mind, moving to an assisted living facility, to a facility where you can get more help, that can also ease the transition rather than suddenly being thrust into a new environment. Secondly, of course, your own self-care. Making sure that you take care of yourself is so important in this area. And again, I see it so often and can't blame anyone. It's such a beautiful midah, how children want to be there for their parents, to do everything for them, but it ends up eroding them and they're completely overwhelmed. That's where the Rambam gets into the yishtadel. I try to take care of yourself. Remember Rashi writes in Parshas Vayeshev, Vayashev Ruven el Habor, right? Ruven was gone. The brothers threw Yosef into the pit. Where was Ruven? Rashi says it was his turn to take care of Yaakov, right? They took turns, right? They delegated the responsibility. Very important for siblings to divide up the responsibility, to know that not one, the burden is not being unfairly placed on one of them. Rama writes this already in Shulchan Aruch. Financially, it's important to do what you can to divide up the burden so it doesn't fall unfairly on one person. Another important thing always to ask a doctor about is to make sure that this is dementia. Believe it or not, there are many conditions that can mimic someone undergoing dementia, and people, if they're not careful, or if they're a little bit rushed, whatever it might be, that they don't check off every box to make sure that we've gotten to the bottom. We know for sure that there's nothing else that we can rule out. Things like vitamin deficiencies, endocrine issues, thyroid issues, depression, a lot of these things, sometimes a cancer can masquerade on some level as personality changes, dementia, cognitive slowing. And you always want to make sure you just ask the doctor, not never in a rude way or in a cross-examining way, but just in a kind way of, are we sure that there's nothing else that we need to be ruling out here? Opting for non-pharmacological interventions. So again, whenever taking care of a parent, encouraging the doctor, what else can we do that's not a medicine to try to help with the behavior, to try to help with the mood? A lot of the times there will be various triggers that you as a family member will be in a much better position to pick up on than a doctor, right? The doctor sees them in the office for 20 minutes. You see them all the time at home. Sometimes getting them out at a certain time during the day can reduce a lot of stress. Making sure they're able to go to the bathroom when they need to. A lot of things can masquerade, or not masquerade, can incite aggression or agitation. And a very careful, keen eye can sometimes pick up on some of these patterns. And that's, again, what a beautiful way to honor one's parents, to be looking for this thing, whatever they can do. If you can't find it, of course, it's not always easy, it's not always there, but something to look at when possible. And similarly, a lot of times family can identify when social contact, bringing up certain things. There's someone who I've visited many times who has severe dementia, who whenever we sing a chagim, a nigunim from the chagim, he's not even religious anymore, but he grew up, you know, in a religious environment, and singing yantif nigunim, he comes alive. And he can sing, he remembers all of them, he remembers the words, the tunes, in a beautiful European accent. And again, it's just a way to connect, to enlighten them, rather than just the monotony of sitting in a chair staring at the TV. You always want to consider underlying causes for various behaviors that may be going on. So if a person has dementia, and suddenly they start acting aggressive, they're acting out of character for how they usually are, you always want to make sure the doctor knows right away. And to be checking, is there an infection, for example? Urinary tract infection is a very common thing that can make people behave more aggressively. Certain medications, electrolyte disturbances, they definitely want to run a full set of blood tests. Also, of course, want to check their hearing, right? Their vision and hearing. Sometimes people just need the hearing aid adjusted, and that will help them calm down, that will help them relate better. And then finally, just wanted to say a very brief note about medications in this issue of how you can try to help, how one can help one's parents medically. Very important, I always recommend this to families. Elderly patients with dementia are frequently on a long list of medications. And you always want to ask, again, in a polite way, never in a cross-examining, rude way to the physician, can we go over each medicine and make sure there's still a need for the medicines? It is not at all uncommon for people to be placed on a medicine at a certain point, and that medicine just stays on the list, even though there isn't really a need for them to still be taking it. But every doctor assumes that the other doctor must have put it on for a reason, so I'm not gonna mess with it, and it can stay on for years. And you wanna make sure that the doctors are reviewing the medications, that every medication is appropriate. There's certain medicines that really should not be prescribed to older individuals, or if they are prescribed, should be prescribed very carefully, and the risk-benefit should be weighed. You wanna make sure that all of these things are being attended to. And to make sure that the list is up to date and not over-medicated. The concept of polypharmacy, where a person just has a lot of medications, that in and of itself, forgetting what the medications are, just the very act of having a lot of medicines on your list can itself be a risk factor for cognitive issues, for delirium, for getting a little bit confused. So those are just a few pointers, both from a halachic perspective, in terms of what it is that the halacha expects of us. Yishtadel linhog imahem kifidaitam, you try your best, and if not, yitzaveh la'acherim, command, instruct others to do that. It very well could be that when you instruct others, they are serving as your shliach, at least for certain aspects of the mitzvah, you shouldn't feel that you forfeited it entirely, but still try your best to do whatever you can, and that there may be certain aspects of the care that it's even preferable to delegate to others if they can do a better job, if it's something that would be more inappropriate for you yourself to be doing. The medical issues of how can you help your parents, really by just being as involved as you can, getting to know them, advising the doctors, being a pair of eyes that can fill them in on what you're seeing that they likely are not seeing in a brief office visit. Just wanted to conclude our discussion. We spoke from a halachic perspective, we spoke from a medical perspective. I'd like to talk just from a Jewish perspective. What does Judaism in general, the Jewish spirit, what does Yahadus have to tell us about this very, very dark parsha of dementia? So one can never overemphasize how tragic dementia is, how sad it is to see a person who his or her life was living in a certain way and is no longer capable of caring for themselves. But as we know, as a Jew, one of the biggest requirements that we have, this is a mitzvah, this is a halacha, the Shulchan Aruch brings it in Siman Reish Lamed. A Jew always has to find the spark of light, even in a very dark situation. The Shulchan Aruch says that a person should be ragil lomar called the avid rachmana latav avid, that a Jew should be used to, just like a halacha, you should shake a lulav, just like a halacha, you should daven, a halacha, you should be the type of person who is used to saying, things are for the good. That thing, I can find some good. It doesn't mean that I say Baruch Hashem, it doesn't mean that I say this is actually good, but litav avi, that there can be, there has to be some tiny, even if it's a 0.1% spark of light that I can take, even from a very difficult situation. And this is, to be honest, what has survived the Jewish people throughout time, right? No people has suffered more than the Jewish people. No people on the face of this earth. And the way we keep going, obviously, with the siyata dishmaya, is by feeling that there is a sense of meaning to what we're doing. That even though we're suffering, even though we're getting tortured, we're not doing this just for ourselves. It goes beyond me. I am doing this to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Most of the world looks at dementia, a patient who starts struggling with advanced dementia, and they see that this is just a prolonging the inevitable, a dreary elongation until death. And why not just get it over with? You hear these terrible terms of Florida being God's waiting room. Right? Mm-hmm. Just a time of just waiting. There's no point to this time and a purposeless existence for someone who is in that state. And Judaism could not argue more vehemently against that. Or we are mechallel Shabbos. You would violate an entire Shabbos for someone with severe dementia to live another few minutes. If they could live a little while. Violate Shabbos. Their life is no less significant than any other Jews, they also are here for a reason. What is the purpose? What is the significance of the dementia? So we know that as Jews, our purpose in this world is not to have a good time necessarily. It's not to make a lot of money necessarily. Those are all fine and good things. The ultimate purpose is to serve Hashem. That in whatever we're doing, to be serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's some ways where it's obvious how we serve Hashem. When you learn Torah, when you daven, you do mitzvahs, that's obviously how you're serving Hashem. But there are also less obvious ways in which we serve Hashem too. Sometimes the very act of simply living, of continuing to live despite something being extremely difficult, and enabling other people to do kindness for you, that itself can be an act of Avodah Hashem, of serving Hashem, perhaps on the highest of levels, enabling others. If dementia is seen as just a pointless period where can it be over already, we're just prolonging the inevitable, their life is worthless right now, that's torture. It's literally torture for both the person and for the family member, for a person who is, God forbid, facing the harrowing prospect of undergoing dementia. That there's no other way about it. But if it's seen as a period of suffering where you are still serving the Ribbono Shel Olam, perhaps serving God in a higher level than you could have, right? Through the humiliation that comes, the loss, the effacement of the Tzelem Elohim, and you're still serving Him with that, at least it has a purpose, at least it becomes meaningful, something that a person can endure. We can't endure torture very long. We can endure pain when there is some meaning behind it. I'd just like to conclude with a story. It was a true story, happened. I was there the next day after it happened in an out-of-town community. Don't want to say which one, and people shouldn't ask around, not that this is anything bad, but I don't like to I don't like to spread things about other people, even if it's not Lashon Hara. There was a community, but they were having a big, a special weekend event. And it was a siyum for the, a celebration for the entire community. And they were flying in big rabbanim, big Rosh Yeshiva from all over the world for this Shabbos. And they had a Shabbos of celebration, and on Saturday night was gonna be the siyum, the event. And they had a whole hall ready, a band, caterer. It was a big, big event. And the Shabbos was going wonderfully. And towards the end of Shabbos, around Shalosh Shudis time, suddenly there was a gasp of horror that they realized that one of the main people involved in this simcha, his father, who had come in from out of town, his parents came in, his father had severe dementia, was not really aware of what was going on, was missing. And they had no idea where he was. And everybody, all of a sudden, what was a revelrous, joyful simcha turned into a panic. And everybody, they called off the event. They said, we're not going to have it. Everybody has to go look. And people throughout this community heard about what was going on. And in the Reform community, the conservative community, everyone was looking. They went on a foot search. They said, we can't rely on the police. We have to go look. And they had a WhatsApp group. Everybody saying, have you found him here? We looked in this forest. Didn't see him there. We looked here. They're looking for this missing man with severe dementia who wandered off. They're looking and they're looking, everybody's panicking. They have a whole Tehillim group, everybody's coming together. Finally, a few hours after Shabbos, somebody WhatsApp saying, we found him. And he was miles away, he just kept walking. Walking was in a bad area, but Baruch Hashem, he was fine. And they WhatsApp that, they said, Baruch Hashem. They came back to the siyum, and they had such a wonderful simcha. They said, it's back on, everybody come. And they came, it was like midnight, everybody came to the hall. And the band was still there, and they danced. This man was dancing more than anyone. He had no idea what had happened. But it was a tremendous joy to be there, you know, as a reverend. And I just was thinking about this, how, like, look what this man accomplished, right? The people were talking, how this community was brought together in a way that it had never been. There was never anything like this. The people panicking, worrying for each other, davening, the Reform, the conservative, everybody heard about it. And the level of unity that he brought was never brought to this community like that ever before. And so again, you ask a secular person, what's the point of this person's life? Well, what's he doing? You're just prolonging the inevitable. There's no meaning to it. And the Jew says, look what he accomplished, even in that state. Is this what he wanted to accomplish? Is this, if you had asked him years earlier, what an honorable thing that he would want? Of course not. But he still accomplished something. He was Makadesh Shem Shemayim in such a beautiful way. And so that just goes to show, it's not our chelek in this world to be determining who has significance, who doesn't have significance, which life is worth it, which is not. You never know. And I would just finally conclude that it's not just about what they accomplish in terms of the patient themselves, it's also about what you accomplish as an individual. What it does to a person, and again, far be it for me to be telling anyone that they should continue caring, that they should continue draining themselves, but what the godless, the greatness that you see in these children who do stick with their parents, who don't just abandon them, or who very wisely refer them to an old age home, but continue to check in, continue to be involved. What that does to them as people is unbelievable. I'll just share a beautiful thought from my friend Rabbi David Mahler, shared with me on the Rashbam a few weeks ago's Parsha. We know that Esav, we're told, excelled in kibud avim. And the Torah says that he had bigdei chamudos, right? That Rivka took the clothes of Esav to give them to Yaakov. What were these bigdei chamudos, these precious clothes of Esav? So the Rashbam says these were the clothes he cared so much about kibud avim that he would dress up in special clothes to honor his father Yitzchak. Right? That was the mitzvah that he cared about. As Rabbi Mahler just pointed out to me, he said, Yitzchak was blind. Yitzchak didn't even know that he was wearing these special clothes. And you see, he still put on these clothes. It's not just about what it does to that person, it's what it does to you also. Yiratzon, we should take from this the tremendous greatness that can come from caring for someone in this situation. That should never be halacha lemaisa for us, that it should really be, and for those who it is already, that things should go as well as they can, and that we should be zochet arichus yam.